Committee of the Public Safety Subcommittee on Ways and Means. I'm going to open a public hearing in regard to Senate Bill 5509, which is Department of Corrections. We don't have a full complement of members here yet. Just so the audience knows kind of what the game plan is for getting this done, we're going to Department of Corrections first. We're going to work through most of the pieces in state police, but not send the state police budget out today. Our intent is to send out the Oregon Judicial Department budget, and then we're going to hold over House Bill 2248 relating to the liquid petroleum gas bill. We're going to continue that. The plan is to continue that over until Monday. So that's the plan. That's the game plan for people who want to be here. Doug.
Mr. Chair, when I walked in the room earlier before the meeting, I said there'd be a meeting tomorrow morning, which some of the stuff may be heard. The chair has changed my plans, and we will have a long meeting on Monday, a crowded agenda on Monday. So, but there will not be a meeting tomorrow after full, as is posted right now, and I haven't had a chance to pull that off the schedule.
It's not the chair's fault because the meeting got changed. It's somebody else's in the building's fault, but that's all right. So I apologize for that, and I apologize for bunching things up Monday, but that's just how the best laid plans. All right, Doug, do you want to continue with Department of Corrections? Corrections want to come forward in regard to the new information we've obtained?
Mr. Chair, as you know, yesterday I had an addendum 3, and now you in front of you is a revised number 3. There was some large angst and concern over the size of the cost of issuance. When we went, as I walked out of the meeting, we had a phone call saying that the number had been miscalculated, and it's truly understandable how it was. They had added two numbers together, and that happens sometimes. So the memo in front of you is what they actually need. The cost of issuance, instead of being a little over $2 million, as it said yesterday, it's $543,495. The debt service remains the same at $1,855,775. These would both be other fund limitations increased, the cost of issuance in the administration budget unit, and debt service would be, of course, in the debt service budget unit. There are other funds. These are costs that are paid out of the COP, the proceeds of the COPs, and this will allow the Lakeview facility to go forward and be ready for opening early in the 2005-07 to keep pace with what the current prison forecast is showing in growth in the prison population. Mr. Chair, those are the recommendations. That's all we have for corrections today other to pass out the budget.
Okay, there were some questions yesterday, though, in terms of what the total cost of the issuance will be on this, and if the department wants to come up.
Mr. Chair, DAS
wants to come up in regard to the...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Greg Jeffrey. I'm the finance manager with the Department of Administrative Services. As Doug indicated, the number that had been presented initially had been put together, you know, very quickly. Unfortunately, I got it from a summary sheet that stated that was the cost of issuance, when in fact it was the combined cost of issuance and the estimated debt service on these obligations. That summary sheet's now been corrected. The right figures are what Doug had just indicated. And I'm open for any questions you might have. I understand there was some question about...
You can wait for just 1 second. We're going to open the full committee now for the public hearing on Senate Bill 5509, as well as open a work session. Okay. I think, Mr. Jeffers, one of the questions yesterday, though, was in regard to the cost of issuance on this particular debt service. What's the amount that's being borrowed? What's the total amount being borrowed on this?
The total par value that's expected, you know, on this would be $23.365 million.
Representative Butler.
Thank you. Greg, does that borrowing, how much of that, break that out for construction of the facility? I recognize that we have $6 million in the ground right now. Is that being, has that been previously secured somewhere else, or are we borrowing on that $6 million as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, yes, the dollars, you know, that have been invested, you know, in the project, were financed in the 2000A series of COPs that were issued. They were originally scheduled to be used for the Coffee Creek project, and due to some savings that the Department of Corrections was able to realize, turned out to be not needed for that project. Since those dollars were already outstanding and the funds available, they were directed at the work that had been done on the Lakeview project.
So $6 million has already been borrowed and encumbered. And,
correct.
And then the $23.365 million, what portion of that is for future construction? What portion of that is included as interest or issuance costs that we'll be borrowing to float this particular security in series?
Well, as I indicated, you know, the total par amount that's estimated is the $23.365, and those dollars will be used, you know, first to pay approximately $20 million, you know, in direct project costs, which are what the remaining costs are to complete the facility. And then the balance of the dollars will be used on the order of paying cost of issuance, which is that $543,495, you know, figure. The rest of the dollars will be used to pay the scheduled interest payments on the COPs during the 2003-2005, you know, biennia, and that amounts to the $1.8 million. $1.855775 is what the estimate of that is.
So it must be something in excess, Mr. Chair, if I may. Must be something in excess of $20 million that will be borrowed for capital improvements on the facility itself. Because if I add up the $543,000 issuance cost and the $1.856 million of borrowing debt service, that's approximately 2.4, and what we're borrowing is $20 million and 2.4. We must be borrowing about $21 million for the facility then. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, that's what I had meant to say earlier.
Okay.
I thought I had, but.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? I had a question for the department.
I'm just concerned at looking at the department's staffing cost and patterns from facility to facility. That the department's really value engineered this thing for optimizing lower staffing costs over the course of this, and I want something on the record from the department that says they're going to, and I don't know if you have an idea of what the staffing's going to look like.
Mr. Chair, Representative, for the record, my name's Nick Armenikas, Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Corrections, and we have valued engineered the staffing pattern. That's the reason for this particular design, and we're looking for all the efficiencies and for the minimum model, and we talked about that earlier, that the optimum level is 400 inmates, and that's what this facility is designed for, 400 inmates.
What's your staffing ratio?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't have that information available. I will get you that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I might, Sue Acuff, Department of Corrections. This minimum build is almost the same as what we have at Coffee Creek. It was intended to do that. So then the staffing patterns for both of those have been reviewed, and yes, it was designed with that minimal staffing in mind.
Before we hear it in full, I'd like to see what your staffing patterns are going to be for the new facility. Are there any other prisons that are built on the same model in the country?
The minimum at Coffee Creek is.
It's built in the same design.
Yes, sir.
So it should be as good or better than Coffee Creek in terms of its staffing ratio.
Chair, members of the committee, will be just as good. I don't know about better due to the fact that we do have a segregation unit in that area where we do not have that at the Coffee Creek design, where the main facility assists them with handling disruptive inmates. Because of the distance where that is at, we had to add that into the design.
Mr. Chair, I think we need to be careful in terms of comparing Coffee Creek. I think when Ms. Acoff says it's the same build-out or whatever of the minimum security facility at Coffee Creek, Coffee Creek, of course, is also an intake center, a women's prison, both medium and minimal security, and I guess also maximum for women by default. So if you want those comparisons, you're going to have to compare the minimum at Coffee Creek staffing and the minimum at the Lakeview facility.
Chair, members of the committee, we also have a treatment unit in that minimum, so that will offset some of that.
Senator Dillon.
Isn't true, because I'm just trying to clarify here some people. Since it's a minimum standalone facility, you say that you're going to have some ability for medical treatment, and the reason that you need to have a segregation there is because it's probably organized in a dormitory atmosphere, and you need to have some ability to take inmates that might be disruptive and put them into a confining an environment.
Chair, Senator Devlin, members of the committee, you're absolutely correct.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nick, I guess I'm a little bit surprised about the segregation unit, because this is a minimum facility, but I also recognize that from a practical nature, that you would have to have some segregation. I'd like to know how big the segregation is, and how much capacity you've got in the segregation here, and because it's the minimum security nature of this, it's my understanding that you would fairly rapidly, anybody that's going to act out on minimum security gets transferred out of the community fairly rapidly to some other type of secured facility. Do they not? Isn't that the policy?
Chair, Representative Butler, member of the committee, you are correct also, but as Senator Devlin articulated very well, that we need to have a capacity to immediately isolate those individuals who can be disruptive. We have 6 beds that are designed into that facility that can be doubled up.
Okay, thank you.
It'll give us a 12-bed capacity.
Okay, 6 to 12.
All right, any further questions for the department? Chair, take a motion in regard to the cost of issuance and debt service. Senator Devlin moves the LFO recommendation as of June 25th, 2003, to Senate Bill 5509, Addendum 3 revised.
Yes.
For the cost of issuance for the Lakeview facility in the amount of $543,495, as well as debt service limitation of $1,855,755. Is there any objection?
$775.
I apologize.
If they can.
All right. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, move 5509 as amended back to the Full Ways and Means Committee to do pass recommendation.
Senator Devlin moves Senate Bill 5509 as amended by this committee to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. We'll open a public hearing, or we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 5045, the Oregon State Police Budget.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you, Matt.
Chair, I passed out, and I think you received this yesterday also, handouts from the state police. This is addendum number 1 in the court session at already.
Bill, could you do a favor if I
pass the table some extra copies? Thank you. We have work session much of this budget already. What you see in front of you is an accumulation of some further items in those divisions that were approve like patrol division, but in places like the fire marshal, at the end, we the subcommittee had not worked the entire budget at all, discussed it some, and so that you'll be approving that full division and title entirely. So if we can start off at the top of the memo under the patrol division there on page one, the only change in the patrol division in terms of the budget is the use of money for from ODOT, which are federal monies for truck safety, truck inspections, and we're recommending backfilling general fund with these grant funds. There are already roughly $800,000 of these grant funds in the department's budgets, financing roughly two FTE plus other expenses. This would add another 2.4 of this other funding source and would be the equivalent of two sergeants and 11 troopers from that $2.4 million. I need to make sure everyone understands is that effectively, by backfilling this, you will take these two sergeants and 11 troopers and remove them, or the equivalent, because they won't dedicate something specifically all the time for this, but you're effectively replacing this resource for general patrol responsibilities so that they will only be able to perform truck inspections under the federal laws. If the federal law allows or rules change and take a wider swath in terms of the eligible uses, then you would be able, they would be able to provide that. So I want to make sure folks understand that it is LFO's recommendation. This is also part of the overall public safety agreement that has been agreed to by leadership in the legislature.
So, Mr. Chair, I understand from that discussion that these patrol officers would be dedicated exclusively. Is that right?
I think the way the department will do it is that they will just intensify on a broader basis some of their patrol officers doing truck safety inspections more so than they would before because of this additional money.
Then allocate a percentage of their time so that we meet the federal requirements.
Right. Thank you very much. I would have loved to have added this 2.4 plus another 2.4. Should that opportunity arise, I would like to take that up with the committee. But at this point in time, we're trying to duct tape and rubber band together this whole budget, and I'm glad that we can do this. I appreciate the Oregon Department of Transportation being able to help us with this and the constituent groups that are out there in the community in order to help maintain the state police funding level and do what needs to get done. So, Chair, take a motion in regards to LFO policy package number 008 in the Patrol Division.
Mr. Chair, I move package 008 and the LFO's recommendation for the OSP.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves the policy package number 008 under the Patrol Division for the Oregon State Police. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, continuing with the Patrol Division on page 2, there's a budget note. There have been discussions, some concern by the subcommittee about the distribution of troopers in the patrol and other divisions after all the unfortunate cutbacks because of House Bill 5100 earlier this year. I think there was some discussion that areas of the state, I think the example used was portions of the coast, were really understaffed, and the department was still evaluating on how to distribute that staff. It is our recommendation that there be a budget note inserted in the wording there is at the top of page 2 to have the state police come back to the first e-board after March 1st, 2004 and report on that distribution and their plans for distribution, not only for patrol but also for criminal and fish and wildlife, and pick up the bulk of the sworn staff.
Chair, take a motion on the budget note.
Mr. Chair, I move budget note as recommended for the distribution of the staff for the OSP.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves the budget note in regard to staff distribution as recommended by LFO. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Doug.
There was one more item of discussion. There was concern, or not concern, more interest by some members of the subcommittee. I'm not sure if it was actual part of the subcommittee discussions, of sort of having an understanding when the next recruit school might take place. I asked the department to be prepared to at least talk a little bit about that in front of you. There are vacancies in the department, but there's also a significant recall list from the layoffs earlier. So,
Mr. Superintendent, welcome.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Superintendent Ron Ricker. As Mr. Wilson has articulated and the committee is well aware, we have still a significant backlog of a number of employees, both sworn and professional, that remain in layoff status. As to the sworn officer side, we originally laid off 129. 45 of those were recalled earlier this spring. We are in the process. That leaves 84 available for recall. At the present time, we're in the process of recalling some additional sworn officers back to work now that we know that we're balanced for 0103. And that's going to get us to a place where, based on what we expect is going to happen when this budget moves, we'll still have about 42 people that are laid off, sworn officers, eligible for recall, but for whom we won't know that we have funding. So the question about when we might be able to have a recruit school is being driven by a couple of drivers. One, the number of troopers remaining on a layoff list waiting to be recalled. Two, the number of retirements of officers reaching their retirement eligibility. And three, of course, the availability of a funding source, whether it's in our base budget or some other dedicated revenue that may become available to us when, assuming if we might, to answer the question about scenarios of recruit schools, if, for example, there was some supplement to our budget, some dedicated revenue, or otherwise we had the money to do it, we would anticipate that we would be work our way through the recall list by about April of next year, based on just on retirements. And if we have the availability of resources as a result of some kind of dedicated revenue or otherwise our budget would grow, we would anticipate being able to work our way through the recall list and hold a recruit school of about, what's the number, Danny, 45?
Yes.
45 officers or approximately in January 04, and probably hire about 40 to 45 officers every 6 months working through the biennium. That's about our capacity to do it. Assuming we had the resources.
Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, for the superintendent. The 40-plus troopers that are on the, are subject to recall, or they can stay on that list if they've accepted employment with other law enforcement agencies, correct? And
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, there's a process within the labor contract whereby they can remain on the list, though they may either remain unemployed or employed elsewhere. They have a limited number of opportunities. We would continue to offer them employment when their seniority number comes up for recall. If they reject the employment offer, re-employment offer two times, then they would go off the list and lose their eligibility.
Senator Devlin.
Do we know how many of those officers have accepted employment elsewhere for other, particularly other law enforcement agencies?
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, I don't know the exact number. Certainly, a fair number of these officers have accepted employment elsewhere. However, some of those that have accepted employment as a police officer someplace else are coming back to the state police and accepting our offer of reemployment. A very small number have left to date, have left and just aren't coming back. That number is still small, actually surprisingly small, but that's where we are at the moment.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Other questions?
Mr. Chairman, before we go ahead,
Senator George.
We in the discussion issue, we use the word a much smaller number of sworn officers. On paper, that may look like the case, but I would like to kind of balance that with a personal experience. Over the last several weekends, I have driven almost an equal number of miles within Oregon as I did in California. And I'm both in the seat of a car and then in the seat of a Freightliner. I noticed about 2 to 2.5 times, because I was actually keeping track of it, more observable Oregon patrol than I saw California Highway Patrol. So lest anyone believe that there aren't officers out there, they haven't been counting the officers on a per 100-mile basis. So our folks are out there, and as I say, substantially more visible than California Highway Patrol.
Thank you. We appreciate that. You're looking out for guys who remember their driver's licenses driving around.
She sure reminded me.
control.
No, they would have had me.
All right. Further questions for the superintendent? Thank you, Ron.
Mr. Chair, I'll continue going on in the criminal division. There is one item here, and this is an amendment to something that we unfortunately left out of the original recommendation. You had in 006 already approved $800,000 other funds to continue the tobacco tax compliant task force. In my haste to get things done, I forgot to also increase the positions in FTE that need to go along with that funding. It's five positions and five FTE.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bill, I move LFO's recommendation on criminal division relative to the five additional FTE and five positions for the tobacco task force.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves policy package number 006 in regard to the tobacco task force. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, on to the forensics division, one item here. The overall public safety agreement included $3 million for a variety of issues, but the one that was stated specifically was 17 new positions for the forensics lab. If you remember, the forensics lab, like other parts of state police, had been cut drastically. The first step was adding back 35 positions. You had already approved that, and the overall public safety agreement included a further 17 positions. So that brings the forensics lab staff up to 107. The agency in testimony said that roughly about 112 was where they felt that they needed to be to run a good lab that kept the backlog down and things, but the 107 is pretty close to relative to where we started off the session in the governor's balanced budget.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
I move policy option package 10 for the forensics division to add the 17 positions, general funds $2,187,169.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves policy package number 010 in regards to the forensics division for the 17 positions. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, there are no changes at this time in the medical examiner's office, but there was concern, and that's why I raise it as a discussion point, about the relationship between Lane County and the state in terms of medical examiner services. I sat down with the state police medical examiner staff, along with Mr. McGee of BAM and others, and discussed this further, and then came to the conclusion that Lane County is putting money on the table. It sounded like in some of the discussion presentation we had that was not the case, but they are providing services or reimbursement or resources of one kind or another, roughly equivalent to the proportional load that Clackamas and Washington counties are. On the medical examiners here today, if you have any questions, Mr. Chair, subcommittee members, but that was a point I wanted to bring back to the subcommittee to close that loop.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler.
Just by way of a question, and I know that Representative Hansen, as former commissioner in Multnomah County, but they contribute rather substantially, that would still be far and away the county that would be contributing the highest amount towards the that medical examiner's office, is it not?
Mr. Chair, I believe you're right. Based purely on population, also they contribute a significant amount. In fact, the current medical examiner's office is in a Multnomah County facility, and part of the staff there is Multnomah County. But, of course, their population is much larger than any others. There are other counties that provide significant, I believe, the sort of south, the Jackson, Douglas, Josephine County has an arrangement that is different than other counties also.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The line I like best is the last one. This is a system that varies from one county to another but still seems to work. And I think that probably applies to a lot of
people. I'm interested in what Lane County contributes in total, what the equivalent cost of what they contributed. I had some numbers run for Jackson, Josephine, and Klamath County.
Just started in the process, and they haven't talked to you yet about it.
Okay.
You haven't talked to me yet.
Go ahead.
Chair, for the record, I'm Dr. Karin Gunson. I'm the state medical examiner.
Welcome back again.
Thank you very much, sir. Lane County has a total budget of $280,000 per year for their medical examiner system. Out of that, $76,000 is rent that they pay on the autopsy and morgue where the contracted forensic pathologist does his work.
Okay. All right.
I just want to, we'll just keep going on this one, and we'll have it on a conversation about this.
All right.
Mr. Chair, moving then on to the Fish and Wildlife Division, there are three changes here. The first one is that to establish three positions, these would be Fish and Wildlife, Fish and Game Troopers, for a cost of $481,914. The financing for that, your counterparts in the next room, the Natural Resources Subcommittee, made available $400,000 for additional staff in this function of the department. And then we're using some other funds that have been freed up from savings that were made from merit and inflation, the standard adjustments that you have already approved. This would roughly bring the bring back the complement of Fish and Game Enforcement officers to where it was for the budget that passed out of the 2001 legislature. So unlike general fund, as we free up funds from merit, inflation, and other standard, those don't necessarily go anywhere specific, so those funds are available, and you'll see in my recommendations that we use those. That was 008. 009, under the same sort of vein, we established one other Oregon plan position. This would also be a trooper position at a cost of $175,462. And there were positions eliminated during the overall budget process, and this we're able to find savings sufficient to buy back one of those. And again, this is financed through merit savings, inflation savings, and those in the Fish and Wildlife area. These are lottery funds.
Representative Butler. Mr. Chair, two questions. Is that the addition then of one FTE? And number two, are those Measure 66 lottery funds?
Yes. In answer, yes, in both of those questions.
Thank you very much.
Chair, package 010 then is to free up some further general fund to be used elsewhere in the department. In talking to the department, trying to determine whether we can find some funds to buy back some of the business services, they suggested taking a look at rent. Right now, Fish and Wildlife doesn't pay rent, as I understand it, in the field offices, even though a substantial number of the troopers in those offices are fish and game enforcement officers. So in this case, we would be offsetting here, increasing the other fund limitation by $417,183, and that general fund that's freed up will be used elsewhere for buying back as we move through these recommendations.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
just an observation, and Ron, Danny, maybe you could do something with this. I appreciate this kind of financing. This is, you know, trying to figure out where you can squeeze the balloon without it popping out the other end. I know a little bit about some of the facilities in my district, House District 60, and I also know that the original building for Ontario was built to house like probably 20-plus staff people. I don't know. There's less than 10 there now. My concern is that with $10,000 a month, we probably ought to have about two other agencies in there contributing towards this kind of activity so that we could put yet another couple of other troopers on the road. This would be a way to do something like that, and I just encourage us to go back and look at all of our facilities and with that same kind of a microscope. This would help us out, I think, because if we're paying $10,000 for a facility that we may be getting 30%, maybe 40% utilization, recognizing we've got a forensic freezer and some other things there, this might be a way that we could really enhance throughout the system. So I appreciate that examination discussion. Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Relative to the Fish and Wildlife Division,
Legislative Fiscal Office's Policy Option Packages 008, 009, and 010 for the positions, relative to the Natural Resources Subcommittee's three positions for Fish and Game Troopers, the one position for the added to the savings on the Oregon plan, and the commensurate $175,462 of lottery funds, and the $400,000 freed up through the Natural Resources Sub, plus the other $81,914, and finally the General Fund rent payment subsidy through the OFW account for other funds of $417,183. I move that we accept the recommendations of the Legislative Fiscal Office.
Okay. Representative Butler moves 008, 009, and 010 in regard to the Fish and Wildlife Division. Any questions? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Dr. Chair, at the bottom of page 4 there, real quickly, there was there has been concern expressed by some Ways and Means Committee members around the loss of highly experienced and trained troopers, specifically in fish and game enforcement and other parts of the Fish and Wildlife Division, that because of the labor agreements and such of bumping and things, that you you had to backfill those positions with folks that didn't necessarily have the experience in there. And I was asked to prepare some language. I did not prepare a budget note because it's very difficult to do that in this case, but I think this, what I have here is some language to put in the budget report. But please keep in mind the labor agreements that are signed by the state and the troopers really are what drive the bumping rights, and what you do here can only go so far in changing what's already in the labor agreement. But this is some language that could be easily placed in the budget report to send a strong message to the department to do whatever they can within the legal agreements of that that contract to protect the trained and experienced fish and game staff.
I'm supportive of this budget note. I just want to add for the record, too, I think that there is some concern about, especially as we approach these layoffs, and I know that the superintendent, Representative Krieger, had talked to the superintendent as well as the union as well about his concerns. Particularly, I share some of the similar concerns that we do highly train officers in specific fields, and then because of the bumping rights, we will put people in those jobs who have never done those jobs and lack the experience and expertise to deal with the public, deal with those particular communities of interest in properly enforcing these particular issues. I think I think ODF&W will be contracting back with the department for those officers, and within the bounds of those contracts, they can specify what qualifications they want those officers to have with the money that they have that ODF&W is putting out for enforcement. And I think that that should help provide and ensure that that expertise remains on the ground. So I think that that's the plan in talking with Representative Krieger, and I'm sure the department will help do that. I just think that while I respect the union's rights and all those types of things, I remain concerned that we put unqualified people in the wrong positions that can't do the job that really needs to get done. Representative Hansen.
Well, just kind of a side comment on that same issue, and certainly this is a concern. On the other hand, I think the overall quality of the state police and the level of training that all of the officers have, I feel relatively comfortable in terms of their ability to move from one task to another, and certainly in some cases they're going to have to upgrade training and things to be able to complement that. But the training base is good enough that I think they can make those switches relatively easily. So maybe my concern isn't quite as high as other members of the committee.
Motion on the budget note.
Mr. Chair, does that raise to the level of a budget note when it's just a budget report?
if it is, then I would.
I thought we had a budget note that we were.
Mr. Chair, what I'm suggesting is not quite a budget note, but some language around expectations.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
I think could be included in the budget report.
I think we need to go back and check with the co-chairs. So I think that there was some expectation that we were going to do a budget note on this with the members of the Natural Resource Committee. So. All right, gaming division.
Mr. Chair, before we move on to the gaming, recently, this is in the past maybe one or two sessions, there has been language of expectation starting to show up in the budget reports, and I'm not sure what the fine line between that and a budget note is, but that is a potential, and that's sort of what I expected to be as part of my recommendation. But we'll check with the co-chairs on that. Gaming division, this is a division that you did not formally act on. There was some discussion, but never took action on it. The major issues, of course, that were discussed are the location of the staff and whether it was proper to have them located in the lottery office. Only in Salem is this division located outside of an OSP leased or owned facility. The lottery pays the rent for them. So if they were to move out of the Salem office, you'd probably have some rent payments having to be paid by the state police that they're getting, not having to pay now. There was also some subcommittee interest and discussion on the cost per investigation for lottery vendor related checks, I believe, in the questions that were asked of the agency and the responses that was covered there. There are three policy packages or changes suggested here, groups of changes. Policy package 109 restores the division captain position to a full-time position. It had been reduced in the building budget process as a result of the court decision that took away quite a bit of the Boxing Wrestling Commission's revenues. What's happening here is that these would be other funds to be restored back, and that since the captain's time is generally taken up almost exclusively by the Indian or the gambling and the lottery functions of the division, it does make sense to have that person fully paid out of there. So that is 109. 001 through 005, the standard reductions already described. And then on the next page, at the top of page 6, is 006. This has been amended here in the last week. This is at first a technical corrections to the governor's budget, and which reduces funding for the Boxing and Wrestling Commission and transfers limitation from SNS generally to state government service charges to correct some issues. Since this was first before you, House Bill 3581 has passed. This created the ability for the, it used to be the WWF, I guess it's now WWE, the Wide World, whatever it's called. I'm not a wrestling fan, so I don't watch it.
It's from Federation Entertainment, didn't it?
Yes, I think that was it. But that bill, House Bill 3581, is expected to bring in $48,000 to the state police, to the Boxing Wrestling Commission. So we're also, as part of this recommendation, suggesting that you offset general fund to the tune of $101,777. That can be used elsewhere. And that is our recommendation, Mr. Chair, for the gaming division.
Question relative to 109, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Butler.
Is in the restoration of that division captain position to a full-time position, what's the equivalent FTE?
I believe it's 0.25. I have to dig and look.
Mr. Biscard. Here for the record, Danny Biscard, Budget Director, 0.25 restoration. So now the position, Representative Butler, is 50% funded with lottery and 50% funded with tribal gaming.
Okay, Mr. Chair, and relative now to the issue of the OSP at the leased lottery office, I don't know that it was the OSP being located there. It was just the duties necessary to be accomplished there, whether it took a sworn officer. And I still am not convinced, and I do have some anxiety over that particular issue, Mr. Chair, that we're using sworn officers to watch the mail being opened, sworn officers to examine. And did we get the information related to the per investigation in the lottery.
Mr. Chair, I don't have that with me, but that was part of the responses to the questions that were sent to members, and I can get that to you if you need to.
Okay. And LFO was satisfied with the response?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Mr. Chair, relative to the gaming division and legislative fiscal's recommendation, the recommendation of $8,150,953 and 42 positions, 42 FTE, and policy option packages 109, 1 through 5, and policy option package 6, I move that those policy option packages in that budget with the FTE be approved.
Okay. You've heard the motion by Representative Butler in regards to the LFO's recommendation in regards to the entire gaming division budgetary piece. Just for the record, we're not sending this out today. So if you want to go back and look at this or if members are interested in this, Representative Butler, I'm happy to entertain that. We'll rehear this on Monday, but I think between now and then, I'm open to taking a look at that. And if we need to go back and take a look at that, let's flag that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very kind.
But we'll just go ahead and move it right now because we're going to have a full schedule on Monday. And if we need to come back and fix it, we'll fix it.
Thank you.
Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, it's, I can do one more division or Robin is here to start on judicial.
Up to you.
What else? Do you need us to lower? Why don't we quickly do the Human Resources Division? It should not take long. You had already acted on this division, but we decided to, or not decided, but there was further work on trying to buy back some of the business services, and so there was money available from a few sources, the freed up rent from Fish and Game, or Fish and Wildlife, part of the $3 million that was on the table that was not used by the for the forensics lab, and some other savings. So those are the finances for the what's before you. The first one is amending package 006, which fixed technical issues. A mistake had been made in reading the spreadsheet, and instead of a $17,964 general fund increase, it should actually be a reduction of $2,016. So that is package 006. 008 is the reverse action that must take place to make general fund available for the rent, or to reduce the rent, excuse me, that you saw in the Fish and Game package. So this is where you're seeing that general fund come out of the rent payments in the general fund, and that will be used in part in 009. And in the 009, you buy back 5 business services positions. One is a payroll, 2 are fiscal, accounting, and budget staff, and another one is a stockroom services position. And as I said, this uses a portion of the $3 million in addition to the freed up rent. Our concerns as LFO are that because of the significant cuts the agency took in this division, specifically in some of the business services, that they were going to have trouble meeting the basic minimal needs of a state agency of this size. For example, currently they have in the budget enough for, I believe, 1 payroll officer, which for an agency like this, which has substantial overtime and other factors, that's probably not enough to get by. So that is what the LFO recommendations are based on.
And remember, too, also, members of the committee, this the Human Resources Division, things were pushed together. So that's why you see a raise in FTE,
yes.
But overall, it's not. So just for the record, I think that that's important that we remember that.
Mr. Chair, the largest increase in the Human Resources Division was bringing in the dispatch folks, which I think was, I have to look, but like 70 positions into this division.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
Relative to the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation for the Human Resources Division, I move that we approve the amended 006 for the technical issues fix, as well as 008 for the backfill on Fish and Wildlife Division, and the buyback of 5 positions on policy option package 009 for a total of $614,629.
Representative Butler has moved the Human Resources Division recommendation by LFO. Just a quick comment. I'm also glad we're able to restore somebody's accounting and business services positions.
I'm concerned that Mr. Bisgard may leave the department, which I hope he doesn't do anytime shortly, but we need to have some depth in those divisions in order to properly care for the needs of the department and ensure the long-term stability of the department. And gang works night and day, day and night to get this stuff done. And we work in double time, especially during the legislative session. So I appreciate this and hope that this will help provide some continuity and relief that needs to be provided within those divisions. All right. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Okay. At this point in time, we are going to continue over House Bill 5045 until Monday, which will be Monday, June 30th. I apologize that we weren't able to get this done. I know that there are some remaining issues in this budget, which I think people are aware of. And so at this point in time, we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 5045. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 5523, which is the Oregon Judicial Department. Mr. Chief Justice is here. And Kingsley. Whoever else is coming up. Susan coming up.
Mr. Chair, as we are waiting for people to come to the table, I have handed out a version that the time issued was 1:11. Would you please work off from that version? I was having problems with my computer not saving changes that I had made, so I was making revisions up until that time.
I thought that only happened on my computer, Mr. Chair.
It's something other than fun when you're trying to make sure that everything is right, but I appreciate all the help from folks doing the proofing. But I believe that you have the correct version in front of you, but please...
So read carefully as we walk through.
Exactly. It was never a problem.
We may need the full hour, though.
It was never a problem with the numbers. It was it's sentences that were added that then subsequently disappeared, which is very bizarre, but in any case...
Mr. Chair, when we're working the judicial budget, then sentences are disappearing. It's very disconcerting.
Yeah, very disconcerting. Mr. Chair, would you like me to begin?
Please, Rob.
Starting on page one, first of all is a statement of expectation. For the 2005-07 biennium, the appropriations to the Judicial Department will be made to the following program areas: administration and support services, appellate courts, trial court operations, mandated payments. The Judicial Department will develop and report its budget for the 2003-05 biennium in the above-referenced program areas. Currently, if you look at the budget bill, the appropriation is to two categories, operations and mandated payments. This will give the legislature a great deal more specificity in how dollars are appropriated. After I go through this, the budget notes, I would appreciate a motion to adopt or to amend. Okay. The first budget note is a report on the use of pro tem judges. The Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court is requested to report to the emergency board meetings closest to December 2003 and December 2004 on the distribution of resources to trial courts for pro tem judgeships. The reports will detail by trial court judicial resource needs and the distribution of pro tem judge resources to meet those needs.
Senator Dunlap.
Mr. Chairman, just a question for the Chief Justice on that budget bill. Mr. Chief Justice, I'm not an attorney, but I feel like an attorney here because I'm actually speaking for someone else.
And who might that be, Senator Devlin?
Can we get it for practice?
Can we
of
ask?
Law?
I think I know, Mr.
Chairman. I think I know, too.
But actually for myself also. both co-chairs of the Ways and Means Committee actually represent Clackamas County, and Clackamas County is one of those counties that makes an extensive use of pro tem judges. Hopefully someday they will make less use when the public supports the building of facilities for more judges. We understand that county to continue their current level of service, they'll need about the equivalent of 1.5 FTE on an annual basis. If you're going to calculate it that way, it'll probably cost in the neighborhood of about $300,000 over the biennium for the pro tem judges there. Is your expectation that within this budget that will be possible?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, I've had discussions with the State Court Administrator, and I would prefer that she answer it. My answer would be, I don't think so, but I want her to have, she's sharper on it. Through several different areas, our funds available for pro tem have dwindled, and not necessarily action of this committee, which has been fair, but starting back, I think, in 99, we started rupturing. They do take an inordinate amount of staffing or of judge pro tem, and they're very creative about it. We try to give them what I've probably inappropriately referred to as most favored district treatment, because they are far and above any other district in use of pro temps. Can we do their full manner? I do not think so. And have any left to go around, much left to go around the other states that have needs for it, too. And with the chair's permission, I'll ask Ms. Click.
Go ahead. Painfully, please.
Chair Packard, Senator Devlin, just to summarize what the chief said, that's correct. And the difference between reductions from the Chief Justice's maintenance level and the number that were being appropriated, the discretionary funds for what we call the GLEAVE stipend for those underfunded counties, is not in that available in that money. Clackamas will still be eligible for some pro tem assistance under our regular statewide pro tem policies. So they will not have a specific stipend, as will none of the other courts that would be eligible under our current level of funding. Otherwise, it's...
I
understand both of your statements, and you probably understand my concern and the concern of the co-chair.
Absolutely.
And our courts there have a very good reputation for timeliness. In fact, they have a better reputation among the legal community than some of the other counties that don't have as many use of pro tem judges. But I'll relay your comments to the co-chair and let him know.
Okay. Should the co-chair be highly supportive of the judicial budget? Maybe the.
Maybe they could afford to buy a few pro tem judges, but we'll leave that question for another day.
I hope he's listening. All right. We have some fairly extensive budget notes here. I'm going to ask Robin just to summarize them rather than read them verbatim, since I believe we all passed the legislative reading test in order to gain membership in the Assembly.
The next budget note, Mr. Chair, has to do with the Judicial Department's automated accounting system, and it requests the Department to review its financial systems and prepare a plan with a goal to implement necessary changes by December 04 and to report quarterly to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology on their progress.
Okay.
It adds details about intended results also. The next budget note has to do with the information management system. The department is requested to add access to the Judicial Department Automated Information Management System, the current case-based system, on a person-based level with an implementation goal of no later than December of 2004, and again to report quarterly to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology on progress. The third budget note requests the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court to develop performance standards for the trial courts and to monitor and report on the performance of the individual courts. This will include performance standards for central administration and support staffing, and to report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee by no later than July 2004 on the standards and outcome measures, and to return to the committee by January 2005 with a preliminary report on outcomes and staffing plans.
Okay.
The final budget note has to do with the application contribution program, and this one I will read to you because we had a meeting this morning with the Public Defense Services Commission and worked out, clarified the details.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we take a motion then, if we could, on budget notes
have these numbers.
No.
Should we just do them by the
first four budget notes in regard to the LFO recommendations?
Mr. Chair, relative to budget notes 1 through 4, number 1 being the use of the pro tem judge, number 2, automated accounting, number 3, the information management system, number 4, the trial court and central administration performance, I move that we approve the budget notes as recommended and as explained to us by the Legislative Fiscal Office.
Any comments on the budget notes? The chair just has a real quick comment on the budget notes. I appreciate Your Honor and your staff working with us on these particular budget notes to craft something that was workable not only for the entire court system for the state, but also hopefully help send a message to the trial courts in the state as well that we are really trying to look at doing justice in new and innovative manners as opposed to some of the manners that it's been done. And I know old habits are hard to break sometimes, and with some of these judges around the state and some of the people around the state. And I appreciate that we're going to look at some of these things and hopefully set some standards to create some efficiency at the trial court level. So I appreciate you working with us. I know we can't mandate it, and I know we have to do this hand in hand and together. And I think that this builds more faith in the court system, and that's the only reason we're asking that it be done.
Do the best we can.
Thank you. Application contribution.
Did we have a...
We didn't vote. All right. Any objections to the first four budget notes? Seeing none? So ordered. Robin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to read this to you. This is a companion to a budget note that you had seen in the Public Defense Services Commission. The Legislative Assembly expects the public defense application contribution program already established in 16 counties will be implemented statewide during the 2003-05 biennium. The purpose of this program is to expand the indigent defense eligibility verification program through revenue generated from ACP. The Judicial Department and the Public Defense Services Commission shall enter into an intergovernmental agreement to accomplish the statewide implementation. The PDSC will ensure sufficient PDSC resources are devoted to statewide implementation. The plan will include a process to shift eligible general fund staff onto ACP proceeds during the biennium with the goal of offsetting up to $2 million general fund through this fund shift during the biennium. OJD and PDSC shall report to the Emergency Board closest to November 2003 on the intergovernmental agreement and the plan for accomplishing statewide implementation of ACP, including the general fund shift during the 2003-05 biennium. The agencies can request the Emergency Board to establish positions and increase expenditure limitation as needed to implement the plan. The OJD and PDSC shall report to the meeting of the Emergency Board closest to November 2004 on the progress to date in executing the implementation plan.
Thank you, Robin. This was this particular budget note was in regard to trying to save some money and also deal with indigent defense verification. So, Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, do we want to go through the brief explanation of the budget note comment to that budget note?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the comment relates to the fact that there were three positions that got transferred to PDSC as part of the transfer of indigent defense. That actually were intended, they were vacant indigent defense verification positions. We abolished those positions in PDSC. The suggestion is that the Judicial Department should come back, when they come back with their plan, they should request reestablishment of those positions when the funds are available.
Is that at the, Mr. Chair, would that be at the November 2003? Or Emergency Board when they bring the intergovernmental agreement and the plan back?
I assume so. The only hesitancy I have is whether or not we will have sufficient application contribution fees at that time. So I wouldn't want to say an absolute. But the expectation is that they should be able to, if not establish, probably establish the positions, perhaps not completely fill them at that point in time.
Mr. Chair, I would move Budget Note 5 relative to the Application Contribution Program be approved by the committee.
Representative Butler moves budget note number 5 in regards to the application contribution plan. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Robin.
Okay. The next motion is that I'm suggesting is approval of the performance measures reported for the Judicial Department as attached. These are system-wide performance measures, which are separate from the trial court performance measures that we just discussed. And if my recollection serves, Mr. Chair, we did walk through these performance measures with the department when they were in front of the committee.
That is correct.
Mr. Chair, what happens to the dispute resolution in this process? Is there a portion of the performance measures that deal with particularly where we have a funding issue there?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Judicial Department dispute resolution function is separate and distinct from that.
We have a bill that's hung up in the Senate that we're trying to retrieve. So,
okay. Mr. Chair, I would make a motion then that we approve the performance measures reported by the Oregon Judicial Department.
Representative Butler moves the performance measures. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, we have a series of adjustments. I will briefly walk through them. Adjustment one is the reduction in the Department of Administrative Services assessment. That saves $228,786 general fund. Adjustment two is the reduction to the Department of Justice assessment, which reduces $16,066 general fund. Adjustment number three restores the Chief Justice's operating level, which restores $30,147,901 general fund and 225 positions, 231.2 FTE. Adjustment four abolishes vacant positions. This abolishes 12 positions, 5.86 FTE. LFO adjustment 5 is the elimination of merit and COLA adjustment, which reduces $2,177,689 general fund and $275,392 other funds. LFO adjustment 6 eliminates inflation and reduces $1,688,870 general fund and $192,211 other funds. LFO adjustment 9 is the co-chair adjustment, which reduces $3,950,000 general fund. The $2.4 million is the roll-up for the 2002 judicial salary adjustment, and the department is requested to self-fund this adjustment. The department will determine how to implement the remaining portion of this reduction. LFO adjustment 10 is a grant funds adjustment, and you have attached to your material the explanation of each of the adjustments. This increases the other funds limitation by $1,299,011 and establishes 9 limited duration positions, 6.7 FTE, and increases the federal funds limitation by $793,756 and increases the existing limited duration positions from 0.5 to 1 for these various grants.
Mr. Chair, I have a question for Lisa Fishbowl.
Sure.
Representative Butler.
Thank you. Robin, will be asked regarding the vacant positions, LFO adjustment number 4 mm-hmm. on the floor. Can you give us the answer to that question before it's asked?
Certainly. The vacancy report that we received for this agency included positions that had been abolished as part of the interim reduction plans. That's the 286 positions. It also included program option packages and transfers that would be funded if those packages were approved but didn't exist yet. So that's the 194 positions. There were 12 positions related to the new judgeships that come online on Monday and need to be filled to support those positions. And then there were 44 miscellaneous positions, of which we identified 12 that were vacant.
And so of the 536 vacant positions, we're recommending reductions of 12.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would argue that the actual vacancies were 44. And that, or perhaps you could add in the 12, but the actual vacant positions eligible for consideration were the 44, and we took 12 of those.
And the nature of the 286 are transfers, as are the 194.
The 194, the vacant position listing included program option packages. So if an agency was requesting 20 new positions, then the vacancy list would show 20 vacant positions, even though those positions hadn't actually formally been created yet because the legislature hadn't adopted the policy option packages.
Mr. Chair, I think that will answer my criminal report for the floor. So.
Are you carrying this on the floor?
No, I'm not. I just want to make sure.
I thought I had a volunteer.
No, I just want to make sure that was in my notes, Mr. Chair, relative to legislative fiscal adjustments 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10. I move that we approve those legislative fiscal adjustments as recommended by Legislative Fiscal Office and accept the vacancy report.
1 through 11?
It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9, mm-hmm. and 10.
That's correct.
Okay. You have heard Representative Butler's motion in regard to approving the LFO adjustments, numbers 1 through 10. Any comments? Chair, just like to make a comment. There's been some issues surrounding the judicial salary adjustment and eating those costs on an ongoing basis. The court agreed to eat those costs at this particular time. However, I don't view that as an ongoing eating of those costs. They've agreed to eat them this time in relation to trying to suck it up for everyone else in the budget. So I'd just like the budget report to reflect that particular point. All right. With that discussion, any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Item number 12, Robin.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members, with that, I would like a motion to approve the agency budget of 2016 positions and 1,036.83 FTE and 260,364,213 general fund, 23,587,834 other funds, 2,350,733 federal funds, and 5,949,864 non-limited other funds.
Senator Devlin moves the item number 12, which is the LFO recommendation in regard to approving the agency's budget.
Question of legislative fiscal.
Mm-hmm. Question, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to confirm, Robin, I don't have my calculator here in this office. Is the total of that expenditure that we're recommending at this time $292,252,644?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
I have double checked that.
Okay. Any objections? Hearing none, the motion is adopted. Robin?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would like a motion to amend Senate Bill 5523 as follows.
you don't need to read it.
Great. Okay. Because the amendments that do what we just adopted.
So. I understand that, Mr. Chair. Representative Butler.
I move that we approve and the amendments to Senate Bill 5523 as recommended in motion number 13, and that we move Senate Bill 5523 as amended to the Full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
You've heard the recommendation by Representative Butler. Just a quick question for the Chief. While we have you here on record, I want to make sure that with this budget you'll be able to provide the full complement of services at the trial court level, though some may be a little bit delayed on occasion.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, let me first say how much I appreciate the work the committee has done in working our way through a very difficult time. You have been a good group to work with, and I thank you for your support that you've given us as we struggle in this biennium and look forward to next. We're $8 million apart from what we said we could do to do the full service. We have some strategies and some opportunities to close that gap somewhat on our own. Consequently, I think I will tell you on the record that it is my intention that we will be able to provide the core services that you have identified that we do on this budget. It may be that we have to slow down a little bit in some of them because of staffing needs, but we'll do our very best to accomplish those things you've set out for us to do. And I also want to compliment your, let's say, fiscal officer, who has been of great help to us in getting our act together.
We certainly appreciate it and appreciate the cooperation of the court. Senator Dowell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, for being here and your staff. I did want to make one comment, and I hope the chair doesn't shoot me for this. We're passing this budget out not having the revenue to actually fund it. So,
what?
we know that you and the other people that work with you do exert some influence in this building. And this is probably a fair budget for the Judicial Department. But it's also dependent upon revenue that we don't actually have now to obligate and to the levels that we've passed some of these budgets out.
Chair, just one comment to the Chief Justice that expressed his appreciation, but I want to, this has been delightful. This is my first opportunity to have served on the Public Safety Ways and Means Subcommittee, and what a delight it's been to work with the Chief Justice and his staff as we've gone through. And these are difficult times, but I want to express my confidence in the Chief Justice and his staff that I think that we've got the right blend of folks and the people who can tighten the belt and get the job done. And I appreciate it, and I appreciate the candor with which the Chief Justice and his staff have approached the concerning issues which we have at hand.
Thank you, Your Honor. I certainly appreciate it. My compliments to you and your staff, as well as the trial court staff. I know Ernie Mazurov has played an important role, I think, in your budget, as well as Jim Adams and Doug Bray, who you've brought in from various trial courts throughout the state. There's a few judges who are sitting in the room, too, who we certainly appreciate being here. And I don't want to leave anyone else out, the bar, the business community, and other people who've really stepped up for the Judicial Department budget at this important crossroads, I think, in Oregon's history. So with that, if there's no objection, we are going to...
We still need a vote.
No, I know.
Okay.
I'm
going to
do that. Yes, please.
I thought you were adjourning.
No, I said, no. Okay. I said that without objection.
Sorry.
All right. Give me a minute.
All right.
I'm a little slow, but not that slow. We're going to move Senate Bill 5523 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
As amended.
With a due pass recommendation. So ordered. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Sorry, I do need carriers to the full, okay, and in the Senate.
Butler volunteered.
No, I'm not carrying the full.
Okay.
Senate.
I'll take
the Senate. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
We're not done quite yet, guys. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2248, and Representative Hansen moves House Bill 2248 be continued until Monday, June 30th, at a regularly scheduled time. No objection, so ordered. All right. At this point in time, we will see you.
Mr. Chair, and you did continue over House Bill 5045, the state police, until Monday as well.
We did. Okay, we did that one already when we did state police. So with that, we will not see you tomorrow after full, but we will see you Monday. So read up over the weekend and be prepared. And be
prepared.
Well, I could have had it at 3 o'clock Friday afternoon, but I didn't do that. So we will... I will see you. We need to be here, though, on time Monday because, as everyone knows, we have a significant time crunch to get everything done before the 30th rolls on, so we're going to continue moving until we get all the budgets done. All right. With that,
we'll be here.